We will now look at the debates among moral theologians that took place in the later Middle Ages that attempted to deal with the question of early versus late abortion based on the tradition that had been inherited from St. Thomas Aquinas. Why are we looking at this in as much detail? Partly because it is misused. It is often cited in a kind of an attempt to discredit the church, to claim that church teaching has been in some way inconsistent in the past. On the contrary, I think looking at these debates reminds us that the question of the significance of human life, the value and precious nature of human life, has been a matter of ongoing careful theological analysis and discussion for many centuries in the Catholic tradition. These theologians reflect the attempt to apply what was thought to be scientific truth at the time, but which we would today call bad science, and to use it as a way of understanding a moral teaching. These theologians do not represent magisterial or official church positions. What they represent is the ongoing and necessary effort to discuss and reflect on the implication of church teaching and church practice in regard to what we understand about the very early beginning of life. So, despite the fact that some of these individuals represent points of views that would later be discarded or rejected, what we see here is the evolution of the development of doctrine, the coming into being of a tradition which will truly flower once it is seen more clearly that it is at the moment of conception that the unique human individual comes into existence, that is to say, in relatively modern times. But looking at these older debates can help us understand where our tradition came from and how God guided it into the greater forms of clarity that it possesses today. So, if you drop down in section 5 to number 5.1, I have adapted from chapter 5 of Jones's Soul of the Embryo some texts that I think are important for us to hold in mind as we look at other sections of his text that highlight the opinions of four specific and very important late medieval and then early and then 16th century theologians. First, he points out that these individuals have inherited a tradition from Thomas Aquinas that regards the earliest embryo as not having a fully human soul, and therefore they are convinced that there must be a moral significance or a moral distinction between a miscarriage or an abortion that takes place early in pregnancy and one that occurs later. But despite the fact that we would look upon this askance and be perplexed by it, Jones points out, and it's important, and I've highlighted it here in red, that all of the writers of this period are very clear that any kind of abortion, even of the human embryo, even those who were convinced that there had not been a true animation, that there was not a fully human soul present at an early stage of development, even if that was their conviction, nevertheless, they were all at one in believing that deliberate, intentional abortion, even of an early pregnancy, was mortal sin. And again, that is to say that it is grave matter, and if undertaken with full knowledge and consent, it represents a mortal sin. That's common to all of these authors. So there's no question of an abortion being a morally neutral or ever possibly being a good action of any kind. The question they were raising was, how close is it to actual homicide, to the question of destroying a human life in the same sense that it would be if you were taking the life of an adult? And despite these ongoing discussions and reflections of various applications of what we would call the Aristotelian and inherited by Aquinas bad science of this distinction between earlier non-human-souled and then later fully human-souled embryo, nevertheless, this conviction that intentional abortion was sinful was expressed in what one would have to regard as church practice that begins to reflect something closer to magisterial, if not teaching, certainly magisterial practice, and that is the ongoing imposition of excommunication for this sin in various synods which are listed here in the last chapter, beginning in the 13th century and then continuing. And as we'll see, in the 16th century, there was an attempt to emphasize this in a very clear and rather unworkable way by making it not only excommunication, but a reserved excommunication reserved to the Pope. But we'll see that a little bit later. If we drop down now to number 5.2, these four theologians are individuals who now begin to try to apply this tradition that they've inherited from Aristotle and Aquinas to a variety of different circumstances, and in doing this, they become the first Christian theologians to seriously wrestle, to grapple with the question of the terrible dilemma of what to do if a woman is unable to deliver a child, if at the time of delivery, for some reason, it's, as we've spoken of before, it's simply impossible to deliver that child alive. The terrible choice was either to take the life of the mother through a cesarean section that would certainly be fatal, or to save the mother's life by taking the life of the child. The Talmud had an answer for this, but Christian theologians had not really raised it in an official kind of way, and here we begin to catch the first glimmerings of an attempt to look seriously at this terrible question and to raise more theoretical concerns that this issue also brings up. So we'll follow the order that Jones provides here in chapter 12. And in number 5.2.1, in the case of St. Antoninus of Florence, who is working in the middle of the 15th century, he describes a conviction, a very clear principle, that it is not legitimate to either kill the mother to save the child or to kill the child in order to save the mother. If you're faced with this terrible dilemma, it is better not to kill in order to save the life of another, even if that results in the death of both. So he's wrestling with this, and this is the conviction he has. However, he raises a theoretical exception to this, and that is, if some kind of life-threatening emergency were to arise, and exactly how this could have happened in the Middle Ages, what sort of circumstances he's raising is really a little unclear. And at this point, he's pushing it back to a point much earlier in pregnancy than the terrible dilemma we've just described, where you have a child that would certainly survive if the child could be delivered, except that it's obstetrically impossible. He raises the rather more theoretical question, supposing one had the circumstance at a period before the soul was completely human, before it was thought that the human soul had been infused into the embryo. And he meant by this, of course, Thomas Aquinas's distinction between 40 days for males and 80 days for females. Now, of course, the problem is you don't know whether the mother's carrying a male or a female child, so even if you believed in this Aristotelian embryology and anthropology, it's hard to know how you would distinguish or determine what your appropriate cutoff date was. But he suggests that it might be possible, if you could determine that the embryo had not yet received a fully human soul, it might be legitimate, again, not that it wouldn't be an act that would be regarded as sinful, but that it could be legitimate because of the fact that the mother's life was endangered. However, he's not altogether happy about this, and he recognizes that this is very, very close to homicide, and so he says that the only justification for this would be to save the mother's life. And again, it's a rather theoretical and impractical question. It's discussed in light of the terrible dilemma of the horror of the possibility of obstetrical abortion or the piecemeal delivery of a child, but he's theoretically raising the question, well, what if this issue arose at an earlier stage and one could determine that the infant was not yet at the stage where we believe that there is a fully human soul? So he had the conviction that it might be permissible to undertake something that would take the life of a pre-ensouled embryo if it were a question of saving the mother's life. But again, how this could actually arise is rather unclear. The next theologian to be considered is Antoninus of Cordoba, which I've labeled number 522, who is working in the middle of and towards the end of the 16th century. And he says that it is homicide whether the life of the infant is taken before or after ensoulment. Even if you are convinced that there is a not fully human embryo, nevertheless directly intending to take that life constitutes homicide. However, he distinguished between treatment for the mother that would directly and intentionally destroy the life of the child, an abortifacient agent, agents that are, as he put it, de se mortifera, that is, they are of themselves intended to cause death. He distinguishes between those and a medication which has as its primary purpose aiding the woman and has a possible but unintended side effect of causing an abortion, de se salutifera, that is, they are intended to promote the health or the health of the woman. They are saving of the mother in some sense. Again, not claiming that you are saving the mother's life by destroying the life of the infant, but by saying the mother needs this treatment. Can she take this treatment even if it may have the effect of taking the life of her unborn child? And he would say, yes, this is permissible. And directly intending to take the life of the child is wrong. He points out that it's not morally permissible to regard the child who is innocent as an unjust aggressor. And this is an attempt, this is a model that other theologians will try to use if they want to justify an act that would be more specifically against the child, because in some ways the child was affecting or threatening the life of the mother. This particular theologian, Antoninus of Cordoba, is not accepting that point of view. So number 523, Peter of Navarra, accepts the previous arguments and is particularly interested in what Antoninus of Cordoba had to say. He recognizes that it is permissible, or he believes it is permissible, to use means or medications that might have as their unintended side effect the inducing of a miscarriage. But he maintains that if it were possible for the infant to be born alive and baptized, that is, the child is ensouled, is capable of receiving the sacraments, then the woman should not take that medication because it would be destroying the life of a human being who could otherwise receive the sacraments. What he is doing in discussing this issue is raising, although he doesn't call it that, the question of viability, the moral significance of undertaking a treatment before or after viability, before or after it would be possible for the child to be born alive, to survive or to survive for a limited period of time. This, of course, becomes a very important issue in our own day, and is actually an issue that not infrequently arises in hospital contexts. And again, it's important for us to be aware of the fact that the Western Christian, the Catholic tradition, has been reflecting on these kinds of issues for several centuries. Then if we drop down to the last individual, number 524, Gabriel Vasquez, who is a Jesuit, and he agrees that it is permissible to undertake therapy, to undertake treatment that might indirectly cause an abortion, but he disagrees that the woman would need to abstain from this if there were a question of viability. He does not believe that the spiritual needs of the infant outweigh those of the mother, that the mother's moral obligation does not extend to sacrificing her own life for the sake of the infant. And again, we're looking at early reflections on these questions. Several of these points of view will ultimately be rejected, but it's very important for us to realize that these questions have been discussed and that many important issues were quite intelligently, quite effectively reflected on, even though the science that they were dealing with we would absolutely reject today.